You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
MovieBS with Baron Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you? Apparently we're the sword budget higher than the pants budget. You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier. The cat and mouse game. Okay. The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now guess who did all this? The cat. Yes. Set up, Rand. This time on MovieBS with Baron Snyder.
Pitch me.
Here's your call. You're the pants. You're too wet. You're too shiny. Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise. I'm going to change the shirt, rubber pants, and kill the clown.
So as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. Why is that tune in weekly?
Hello and welcome to MovieBS with Baron Snyder. I'm Jeff Bear. I'm the host. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eric D. Snyder, one of two hosts of this show. That's my other host, Jeff Bayer. And welcome to the show. What are you drinking this evening?
I am drinking a beer called The Optimist.
Oh.
I don't know if I've had this on the show yet. It's Fort George.
Is that beer half empty or half full?
Of course it's half full. And then... I have a little bourbon that I might get to after. I don't know yet.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
It's poured and it's ready to go just in case because guess what? I'm not Mormon anymore, Eric.
I know. It was just that 1 week where you couldn't drink while we were doing the show.
It didn't stick.
And now you are making up for lost time.
Well, I have to drink. It was either like I parse it out carefully over time and in like 6 months I catch back up, mm-hmm. or I just double this week.
Right, right.
So...
Well, that makes sense because you have to get your liquor in. Well, your doctor's been concerned about your alcohol levels. You weren't getting enough alcohol.
That's right. That was it.
We have a fine show tonight, today, probably. Again, we haven't done it yet. It's probably all right. We're going to talk about some movies. We're going to talk about Fantastic Fest, which is coming up.
But first, iTunes review. Here's the thing. What you do is you go onto the computer, you go onto iTunes, and you write a nice little thing about our show, and you rate us, and it helps, because then it helps. We don't know how.
It doesn't help at all. It doesn't help anyone.
Okay. It's entertaining.
Yes.
Why is it entertaining? It's because of Eric D. Snyder, an old-timey radio voice. And here he goes once again with something that someone wrote.
This is from Gru2257. The title is Best Podcast with a BS in the title. And he writes... Hello, my name is Eric D. Snyder, and I have the greatest initials on the planet. I am the evil overlord of this podcast. I know more about quality movies than anyone on Earth. I have complete creative control of this podcast, and I allow my very tall minion, Jeff, to entertain himself by joining my podcast. I don't like the tone of this person. I hope to soon replace him with his son, Dylan, but he is not that witty yet. We shall see how he turns out. Through this medium, I have created the Internet's best weekly podcast about movies based in Portland that is released on Fridays. Ha 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 ha. Parentheses. Parentheses. Not an old-timey voice. This podcast is actually fantastic and well worth the listen. Well, thank you, Gru2257.
Wait, did Gru tell you to drop old-time radio voice
in parentheses,
for a certain part? Wow.
Yeah. Stage directions.
Yeah, I didn't know that we could up it to that kind of level.
Well, we've you really can't. Here's yet. How I should have read that. Ha 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 ha. Not an old-timey radio voice. This podcast is actually fantastic and well worth the listen.
So besides that part, I heard my son's name.
Yeah.
So that brings up a good story.
Oh, this is backfired.
When I got home from the movie, mm-hmm. My wife was talking about... He's been building rocket ships a lot with Legos. So they went on YouTube and watched space shuttles take off, and then where do space shuttles go? They go to the moon, and he was like dead set. I'm gonna go to the moon. He followed it up with because I want to find out how it tastes.
How the moon tastes.
It's just such a.
That's cute. That's cute.
He's full of mystery and wonder, and gosh darn it, it's adorable.
Mm-hmm. First up, The Magnificent Seven.
Ooh. Da, 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 da. Oh, wait.
That was Indiana Jones.
No, that was Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Nope, I lost it already.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. There we go.
Here's one of the things that I liked in this movie is that instead of hearing that tune, we would just hear the rhythm of it. The music would go, dun. Dun, 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 dun. Like to make you think of it without actually hearing it.
The musical score in this movie is really good, and it's very active when it's pulling you through what otherwise might kind of feel like a kind of flat scene. It does bring it up a notch.
This is a good old-fashioned Western.
Man, this is
a good old-fashioned style. The music is very Western-y, and nothing has been modernized or stylized, really.
And it looks like Denzel was on a horse every time Denzel was on a horse. And guess what? He looks good on a horse. Mm-hmm. I was like, he looked really casual. There was a couple times I watch actors on horses just to see like what they can do.
Sure.
I'm not very good on a horse, but like I know what you're supposed to look like and I can kind of do that on occasion.
You're supposed to not fall off.
But in galloping and whatnot, it's like you look to see how they're bouncing.
All right.
Chris Pratt was bouncing a little bit. Denzel, good God, he was never bouncing. I'm just saying.
All right.
Some good horse riding.
This is directed by Antoine Fuqua, who's an old pal of Denzel Washington's. They made Training Day together back in the day.
Hey.
Huh.
Ethan Hawke.
Oh, yeah, Ethan Hawke. Oh, yeah, I forgot he was in that, too. Yeah, Ethan Hawke.
Oh, poor Ethan.
I'm missing the gene that makes me love Ethan Hawke.
Oh,
I always liked him.
Yeah, the before.
Denzel and then Ethan Hawke, Chris Pratt. Here's our seven. Everyone knows the story. Old West Town, 1879 or something, and they're being harassed by Bogue. He's played by Peter Sarsgaard.
Pretty happily played by Peter Sarsgaard.
Really enjoyed himself there as the villain.
He did enjoy himself.
He has taken over this town, and he'll buy your land for pennies, or if you don't want to sell it to him for pennies, he'll just kill you.
That's what it'll do.
And so the townspeople go and they round up some desperados, some mercenaries to help them out. Denzel.
Yeah, they're gun for hire, but like the movie definitely paints it as like they're doing a good thing.
Well,
they know their motivation.
Well, Denzel is as he keeps saying, a duly sworn warrant officer.
Mm-hmm.
So he's legit. Chris Pratt, he's just kind of a gunfighter, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke, former Confederate sharpshooter, well known for his expertise.
Would you like to tell everybody his character name?
I would, because it's Goodnight Robichaux.
Goodnight Robichaux.
Goodnight Robichaux. And Vincent D'Onofrio is an old trapper, old guy who's famous for killing a bunch of Indians back when that was what people did.
Might have called him a coot as well. He could be an old coot.
He's a, yeah. And
then we got Billy Rocks, who is along the ride for with Goodnight. He is very quick with a knife and very good with a gun.
The character seems to be Japanese. Goodnight Robichaux mistakenly lying says that he met him in Shanghai, which would make him Chinese, and the actor is Korean. Just FYI, it's a multicultural thing here. Byung Hun Lee, it was not familiar to me.
Correct, me neither.
Although he was in Red 2, G.I. Joe Retaliation. Terminator Genesis, and then
Vasquez.
This is the Mexican criminal. This is a straight up criminal who Denzel is supposed to be bringing in, but instead he makes him disbarring. Come fight with us instead.
And his role is to playfully bicker with Chris Pratt's role, and they do it quite well throughout the film.
Yes, and then finally there's an Indian guy named Red Harvest. So really, you got a black guy, an Indian, an Asian, Mexican, a drunk Irishman, and a Cajun. And an old coot.
And thankfully, Ethan Hawke points that out when they're on riding horseback at one point.
Did you notice when he pointed that out that he did not mention that one of them was a black guy?
No.
Denzel's race is never mentioned that he's a black guy. Did they mention it? What did they mention?
At the very, very beginning, yes.
They say
brown.
Yes,
somebody
that's right.
Under their breath barely says brown. And yeah.
Even there, when Goodnight Robichaux is listing them all, he puts himself and Denzel in the category of one having been blue and one on the gray, the Union of the Confederacy.
That's right.
So Denzel is the blue as opposed to the black guy. I thought that was fascinating for being right after the Civil War, for his race not to be an issue was an interesting choice. And I did no reason to get distracted by it, but it's just an interesting point. The seven, you could say they're magnificent, I suppose. I mean, they're pretty great. I mean, you know.
And there's really a basic plot with some classic lines. I seek righteousness as should we all, but I'll accept revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that is just like, yes.
Yep.
Let's cock our guns. and go fight. Let's do it in cowboy hats.
And it's a familiar setup. I was surprised. It's been a long time since I've seen the Magnificent Seven, but I was surprised how many elements of this remake reminded me, like, oh yeah, I feel like I think that was in the original, or like, mm-hmm. plot points and character points. And it's a great setup. It's about halfway through before we get to the point where we are in the town and we're like ready now to get ready to fight. And then there's some training time, and then finally the big siege happens.
they're getting their three amigos
very much
ready.
Yep.
It is. It's an original A-Team movie. It is that concept, like training sequences, blah, 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 all of that. Did you have a hint of a problem with proximity and how everybody fit? Like, there was the town, there was the camp, and there was the mine. And it seems like one, like, when something very significant happened to one, it didn't seem to have anything to do with the mine. And I couldn't figure out the distance that trying to figure out here.
The mine seemed to be up in the hills. Like, away from the town. Like, the men would go up there to do their gold mining and then come back down into town. Because there was
but
at the very beginning...
Were they doing it every day? Were they coming back every day?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah, I think it was like that, yeah.
These are the finer things that you people are going to need to know when you sit down and watch Magnificent Seven.
Very much an old-fashioned kind of Western, the kind of movie where guys are being thrown out of saloon windows.
Yep.
Fuqua does the close-up of the eyes, like the Sergio Leone movies used to do a lot. Close-up of just the eyes.
Just a classic saloon entrance from Denzel. Mm-hmm. Like all of these things, and it is Chris Pratt's role to be the king comic relief here. And
I'd say
for the most part, he does a really good job of stealing those moments away from Denzel, who's really like he's awesome in this role. I love it.
He is, He's not a very colorful character, Denzel,
no.
is it? He's kind of the straight man. He's the leader of the group. And then Chris Pratt is more the one cracking jokes and doing card tricks, doing magic tricks with cards.
And I will say, for me, they dive into Ethan Hawke's character and Denzel's character a little bit more than everybody else, I would say.
Right.
Like they have a little bit more to do. I would have appreciated, if done well, and I know that's a huge thing to ask, I would have appreciated the other five having their similar moments because at some points it just kind of felt like, oh, who do I care about here? If like, do I really care if one does something or not at the end?
Which is kind of what happens in any movie about a group of people. Like there'll be a couple of them that the movie is really interested in and the rest are there to pad it out.
You're saying nobody would care if Hawkeye died. Are you actually saying that to me right now?
Yes. But like Vasquez, the Mexican one, he never really got much to do, unfortunately. Don't know his story at all, really. The Indian guy, too, a little bit.
And I even felt the beginning of Vincent D'Onofrio's character, who's really like supposed to be outrageous and playful and fun, he could have gotten a little something more. Because it seemed like he was thrust upon us almost to the point where I was like, oh, this isn't the original. Like, you're rushing this.
There were hints about him. He's an older guy. And he's an old coot, and there were hints of like religiosity with him, a little bit mm-hmm. of Bible mentioning. And there could have been more with that.
Could have been a little flushed out. But it is at its core, it's an action adventure movie, and they do that very well.
The only way that you would know that this was a Western made now instead of 50, 60 years ago. It was some of the swearing, although not a ton, but more swearing than you got in the old days. And the violence. The violence is a little bit more realistically grisly. Not super graphic, but just a little bit more than you got in,
in the old days. They didn't go overboard with it.
But yeah, I kept thinking, my dad who loves Westerns.
100%.
I'm like, oh yeah, dad should go see this. Dad would love this movie.
Yes, I'm probably going to get my dad tickets to this just to be like, go, you got to go now, go. He's going to love it.
And I think if you like Westerns, I don't know why you wouldn't like this. It's a Western. It's a classic Western. And it's a lot of fun and well shot, well made, well acted. Good fun time. And I give it a B+.
8 out of 10.
It's BS approved.
Woohoo!
Well done, Magnificent Seven. I was hoping you would give it a Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, I know, but that felt too on the nose.
Mm-hmm. It's a Magnificent Eight.
Yeah.
That's the sequel.
Sequel.
Yeah.
Oh, God, they actually would.
Then they'll just add an eighth person. The eighth one will be a woman.
Yeah.
They'll add a woman for it'll be Julia Roberts. And then we come to a movie called Other People.
Other People, written and directed by Chris Kelly, who is now a co-head writer of a little show called Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was one of the regular writers. Now he's a head writer.
That's right.
And this was one of the opening night films at Sundance this year.
And I assume that's where you saw it.
It is where I saw it, yes. Many, many months ago.
I saw it in the comfort of my own home with a screening link.
How nice.
It was not bad at all to do that.
I saw it in the comfort of the ballroom at the Yarra Hotel, converted into a makeshift theater.
Not your first ballroom. There are no other people in this movie. All of the people are in this movie. There's nobody else. Like, it was from the get-go, I was blown away at every, oh, that guy. Oh, that one. Oh, I remember his name. Oh, that woman's hilarious. That's the old head writer of Saturday Night Live. And like, all of these things. And then, you know, after that burst, it focuses very nicely. But then it keeps trickling in. It is a constant smorgasbord of enjoyment with familiar comedic faces. Even though this is most definitely a drama with some comedy.
More of a drama, yeah. This is one of those movies about funny people where the funny people aren't funny in their everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
Which maybe Chris Kelly is not funny in real life. I follow him on Twitter. He seems like he's funny. He's the head writer of SNL. He's probably funny. But his character, he's Jesse Plemons. This is very autobiographical. You can tell it's autobiographical. There's this tendency with first-time filmmakers, especially, to assume that because it's your story that makes it unique. It's like, sure, I've seen lots of other movies about a directionless young man who goes to his hometown to deal with family strife. But none of those were based on my story when I went to my hometown to deal with my sick mother.
I have a different voice.
Yeah. And I mostly like this movie. And I think that it's really nicely directed. And I think it's humble and there's some wonderful performances. But it really is very, very familiar.
It is familiar
it's
ground.
It's cut from that template.
Well, and that's what really does make the appearances of June Squibb, Matt Walsh, Bradley Whitford. But again, the centerpiece is Jesse Plemons and Molly Shannon.
Jesse Plemons, better known as Landry from Friday Night Lights.
Molly Shannon plays his mom, who has been diagnosed. And in the beginning of the film, boom, she's dead.
She got a bit of the... Yeah, that's right. She's dead at the beginning. She got a bit of the cancer.
And then we get to go back. We get to travel back in time to watch her slowly die this time.
It's good. You let us know up front she's going to die. Okay, now let us watch it in all the juicy details. Man, this movie... This really is everything from Sundance. You got a gay son, a disapproving dad, mom with cancer, going back to your hometown that feels like a small town after being in the big city.
I'm looking forward to it just being ridiculous to have a disappointing dad with a gay son.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, wait a minute. What? He's drawing the line about what? He has a problem with this, but he seems to be a human being.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess that can still happen.
Not everyone is as progressive as you are, Jeff.
Isn't that ridiculous?
A little bit.
Yeah.
So his name in the movie here is David.
David.
And he is a gay comedy writer. Back to Sacramento.
And he's struggling a little bit.
Struggling in his career.
Right. He's a UCB alum. There's talk of pilots and potential things getting picked up. But he's mostly struggling in that aspect, struggling in his personal life. And then, of course, with his family, there is struggle.
What with his mom dying of the cancer and all. His dad, who's Bradley Whitford... The thing is, he doesn't even acknowledge that David has a boyfriend who is Zach Woods. What's his name from Veep?
Yep.
Wait, not Veep.
No, what are you doing?
I don't mean Veep. Yeah. I mean...
Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley, yes.
Right. I was like, wait, he's in Veep? What? I don't remember.
No, there's
you,
a...
You got your tall gangly guys confused.
My tall lurpy guys mixed up, yes.
That is. I can spot the differences between all of them. So if you're ever curious about like, now which gangly guy is this? I know them all. It's like brethren.
All tall people look alike.
How dare you?
Zach Woods, yes. And dad doesn't even acknowledge the relationship. And that relationship is ending, by the way. So there's issues there. So it's just a bad time for poor David going back to Sacramento. But the real focus then is his mom's cancer and his reaction to it and their relationship. And I really like – these are the two performances that I really like. I think Molly Shannon is really excellent. I think she's
She's phenomenal.
Wonderful.
There's a moment early on in the film where she and her son are talking in the bathroom, gearing up to go visit family. Like, that's all downstairs. It's all ready. And the way that they're talking to each other, she's talking to him like he's a human being that she really appreciates, as opposed to a mother-son.
Right.
And for the most part in the movie, even though obviously there's a maternal thing and he's in a sense a mama's boy, there is that thing where they just, you know how much these two like each other.
Yeah.
And how he sees her as his family, and then there's everybody else.
Right, right. She's the world to him.
Yeah, and it's really just that relationship. You're right. It's lovely. It's the heart of the movie. It's what keeps it going. And there's some side things that are amusing in David's life when he's like ranting about Sacramento or trying to maybe pick up a guy here or there.
And dealing with well-meaning but clueless relatives, that whole thing.
That's right.
It's interesting that the opening scene, I think it might be the very opening sequence where mom's death is immediately followed by a phone message from someone who doesn't know. Someone oblivious. Yeah, the voicemail. Very funny. Yes. After that moment, the film keeps its comedy and drama in separate compartments. Except for that one blending of it, it is when there's comedy, it's in a separate scene from the drama, which is, again, an interesting choice from a comedy writer. It's interesting that there wasn't more, that he didn't put more humor into the serious stuff, too.
You're right.
Not wrong or bad, just interesting choice to do it that way.
Yeah, and otherwise it's the standard thing of, like, maybe there will be some drama with, like, the button of comedy at the end, like farting in the bed or something like that. But you're right.
Because I kept thinking I didn't keep thinking of, because I saw this before that. But now, in hindsight, I keep thinking of Don't Think Twice, the Mark Birbiglia movie, which does a lot with funny people, comedians, dealing with sad things happening and how they use humor to cope. And this guy, this character, doesn't use humor to cope. He's not really a funny guy.
No, that's the weird thing. When you see him perform on stage in one particular scene, it feels like you're looking at a different person a little bit. Like he and maybe this is who this guy is in real life, and he wanted to make sure that shined through in the film.
Maybe.
But like he has a stage presence that otherwise doesn't exist in his day-to-day life at all in the film. Did you notice Jesse's choice as far as mannerisms go? It talked about maybe like, I don't know, it felt like maybe the youth of David's character or something like that. But he pulls, even though his hair is not in his eyes, never in his eyes, he consistently has like the pulling of his hair to the side. And there's something about that where it's like, I overanalyzed it. I was like, I bet his mom used to do that when he was little. And this is his comfort zone. And he's an awkward kid. And this is it. But yeah, there's time to do that in this film because really you are just – you're hanging out with a cancer patient.
Just watching her die.
Watching her die. And then everybody else and how they're coping with that. And it's not heavy. It's actually kind of almost a light film, wouldn't you say, as far as the subject, as far as death goes and everything?
Yeah, it's not super heavy. I mean, I would imagine if your mom has recently died of cancer, it would probably feel very heavy to you. But yeah, it's not an oppressively heavy, and it's got some really sublime moments of that quiet drama and really nice moments with Jesse Plemons and Molly Shannon. A couple more complaints about autobiographical movies, and this one in particular, is unnecessary characters. When there are things, when you include things in the movie because that's how it was in real life, even though there's no reason for it. I'll give you an example.
Please do.
David has two sisters. Who are around, but don't figure into the story at all. I say either give them something to do or cut them out of the story.
Or maybe just have it be one sister.
He's got a gay friend who has a really flamboyant little brother who is amusing, but again, unnecessary.
Yeah, I know. He was just definitely for color.
And I even really felt like the thing, all the stuff with his romantic life and his issues with his dad, that all kind of felt like a distraction from the main thing, too. Like, what is mom's impending death have to do with dad's acceptance of David, other than that they all involve David, you know?
Well, I mean, it's the idea of this is who he's left with. Like, what is his family? And that was that was the concept there with like the $2, his two sisters and how distant he is from them. But again, it didn't really feel anything. They just showed it to us occasionally. Like,
right. And it didn't feel like they were trying to show that he's distant from them, just that they exist and right. They're around because mom is dying and they would be around. But
there was a really June Squibb and Paul Dooley.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Dooley? The grandparents here, Molly Shannon's parents. There's one scene that is like classic grandparent, but then like a little emotional moment in there too that was really nice. And that's the thing. You're looking at these nice – it's almost like sketches. You're just looking at these like, oh, okay, we're gonna hang out with this group. And remember, the key is this woman's dying here.
Little vignettes. Yeah.
Right. And it, yeah. Molly Shannon, she just seems like the nicest human being. And that carries over in this role, and it's good to see her doing wonderful work. That makes me feel happy.
It's a shame she's dying of cancer.
No. That was just the cancer. Or, I mean, just the character.
Oh.
Just the cancer was dying.
The cancer was dying of Molly Shannon.
That would actually – I bet that would be the case.
Molly Shannon could kill cancer. I didn't love this movie. I like it fine. And I almost feel like a jerk criticizing it because it is obviously such a personal movie. But, you know, it's my job. But it's still recommendable. I give it a B-.
I'm a little – barely higher than you, 7 out of 10.
And by the way, Other People is in theaters and also on video on demand, your iTunes and such like, and Amazon. You can watch it in your own home if you want to.
Yeah, and if you bring like 40 people over to your house and tell them each to give you $1, you're making money.
You're making money, yeah. You can't afford not to watch it. Also on video on demand and in some theaters is this movie called The Good Neighbor.
Like a Good Neighbor.
Well, that sounds like a pleasant film.
The Good James Neighbor. Caan is there.
This was at South by Southwest when it was called The Waiting. That's where I saw it.
And Eric didn't like that title.
I did. I thought it was a generic title.
Yep.
And you've seen it. And I found my notes, so I feel like I remember it pretty, pretty well.
Should I explain in the beginning just in case you're a little uneasy? So a pair of high school kids, they decide...
A couple of real turds, these two.
Well, yeah.
One's more turdy than the other, but...
Yeah, but like even sometimes in the beginning...
Yeah, but tell the people what they're up to.
All right, so what they're up to is one of the coolest freaking ideas for a movie... as far as like setup goes, when you just watch a movie and you don't, yeah, don't do it at home.
For a movie, yes, good idea.
They are going to haunt and change the perception of their neighbor over the course of 6 weeks.
James Caan, they're going to make him think his house is haunted.
And you know, the cool kid. What's the cool kid's name?
The cool, like the ringleader, the main guy.
Yeah,
Ethan.
Ethan convinces Sean and others that it's like this guy's a nobody. And not only that, he's just a jerk. He's a jerk all the time.
They tell us,
so who the heck cares?
They tell us he's a mean old guy, supposedly.
It's the mindset of like, oh, who cares? We're teenagers and right. We're doing this. Who cares?
Poor old James Caan. So they set up cameras. They sneak in a set of cameras in his house so they can surveil him. And then they also like set up, you know, things to make spooky things happen.
That's right.
Make him think he's being haunted.
And there's a twist. And the twist is you are watching their footage, so it's POV in that section.
Right.
But then it's a movie that actually does POV on occasion.
You know, you asked me if this movie was all POV, and I said maybe. And I was thinking I had this – it was nagging at the back of my head that this was the one that didn't do it. And I found my notes, and I was right. Yeah,
right.
That they use the footage shot by the characters themselves as necessary, but then they also throw in like objective, regular, you know, movie stuff to fill in the details. And it's nice to not feel obligated to stick with that thing, because they're also as we're seeing the story, we're also seeing a flash forward in a courtroom.
That's right.
And those courtroom scenes are shot in the normal way, traditional way.
Now, right. And I will say there is something a little bit jarring over the freedom you have in a POV of what you're supposed to act like versus its structure. And in the courtroom, there was like one or two actors that it took me a while to get used to. I didn't believe or love their performance, even though I really liked the idea of it. Mm. But eventually I warmed up to that, you know, courtroom reality in the bigger scope of the movie. It just struck me as like, hang on, I need to understand what we're really doing here. Like, what is, how much are we going back and forth and everything else? And is this actor important? Is that actor important in this courtroom? That sort of thing.
They do a good job of keeping us in the dark of what the courtroom scene is about. Like, what is it that happened that we're now talking about in court? Mm-hmm. And that's nice to kind of tease us along so it doesn't give it all away all at once.
And speaking of tease, this movie does a great job of the tease. In terms of, there's scenes where you are waiting and wondering, mm-hmm. and James Caan character could really go into a few huge directions based on this haunting.
Right.
So you're wondering about that. And then in the courtroom, fairly early on, there's like a big leap kind of about, you know, what happens in the end.
Right.
Of this 6-week period.
Tantalizes us with the thought, oh, well, what did happen? What did these kids do? Yeah. It's a really effective storytelling. Very, very smart.
Yeah.
James Caan is unfortunately basically just a prop in this movie.
Hmm.
He's an old legend, James Caan, but this could have been any old guy. I just felt like he was underused, and just the character is not given enough to really do.
I feel differently in the sense that there's some aggression that this character shows early on, and what he's physically still capable of.
Right.
That I felt helped with James Caan's presence, especially for me. I was appreciative of the ending of this movie in ways that I really didn't see coming. It was a really pleasant surprise for me.
I felt like the good parts of this movie more than compensated for the generic parts, which it mm-hmm. does. It does have some.
And we should say also with some of the POV, you're just like, why are you showing me this recording? That's life. That's POV.
Right.
Especially in the sense that we're gathering that the courtroom is also watching some of this POV, but maybe not all of this.
They're seeing some of this footage. Yeah. And like the line I wrote down is in the courtroom, the prosecutor, someone says, this is the camera that ultimately captured the tragedy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, where they're showing some of this footage there in court.
Yeah, overall, the way that they go through the steps, I really like mm-hmm. In this stage, we're going to do this test to this old man. In this stage, we're going to do this. And, you know, title scenes and everything. I really liked the progression of that.
Yeah.
To the point where there's some really good bones to this story that should be appreciated.
Yeah, I think it is a good enough movie. I'm in the B-minus range.
It's a 7 out of 10 for me. It's a strong 7 out of 10. I would have wished for maybe a little bit more, I don't know, almost like a bigger budget and a few different mm-hmm. actors. But again, at its core, I think this is a pretty cool movie to check out.
And then there's another movie. Still, more movies.
More.
This one, Mr. Church.
Mr. Church. This is not a boats movie, but you would assume it must be a boats movie.
Well, it is. It says inspired by a real friendship.
Yeah.
It is. So it is a boats movie.
No, that's not enough.
Well, the screenwriter, Susan McMartin, was writing about her actual life. She had a Mr. Church in her life. Uh-oh. And you can tell when it's, is she a first-time writer? No, she's not a first-time writer. Well, she writes like one. You can tell a first-time autobiographical writer, because when you don't know how to end the story, you just end it by having the character who represents you sit down at a typewriter to start writing the story about what just happened.
It is a,
it's a good, if when all else fails, you just do that.
All right, here's the most important thing. Mr. Church is Eddie Murphy. This is a drama, and Eddie Murphy maybe once tries to be funny. So that's what you're getting here.
Yeah, it's not a comedy.
Yeah. Not a comedy. Mr. Church is a guy who he likes jazz and he likes to cook. Boom. That's it. He doesn't want to talk to you about anything else.
Not about his personal life.
No. Leave his personal life out of this, people. He just wants to cook.
He's a professional cook, and basically a rich guy dies and leaves Mr. Church to his mistress or former mistress.
Yep.
Who is the mother of our main character. And it's because she is dying. Oy, with the cancer and the dying and the moms.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Man, she's dying. She got 6 months to live, and so her former boyfriend has bequeathed his full-time cook for six months.
As you do.
Yeah. Actually, he offered the cook like a lifetime salary, so it's not not totally offensive of like, we're going to, I had this servant who worked for my family. I've left him to you. But anyway, then she doesn't die in 6 months. So he sticks around for a long time. And the girl, they got a little girl, a bitchy little daughter. What's her name? Charlie. Oh,
Charlie. Okay,
little monster, little turd of a little girl, this one.
Charlie starts out as 10. And she's narrated by her annoying adult self.
Britt Robertson.
Right. But that isn't the thing. The thing that's annoying about this 10-year-old is she's upset that she has a cook in her house cooking for her and then leaving. Not like it's not like he's like taking over and sharing a room with her or anything.
No.
He's cooking amazing things, which she loves, but she's decided that she's annoyed.
She's just a little bitch. That's all she is. I'm sorry, but she is.
I just hate that she's annoyed, but then she fakes annoyance, and there's no reason.
Yeah, there's no reason to be annoyed by the sudden presence of a cook. What bothered me in this part of the movie was she's narrating, it's all her point of view, and then suddenly there's a scene where the mom talks to Mr. Church, and we find out that she's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
But you're breaking the rules there. You got a narrator. Then you can't have stuff going on that she doesn't know about. And she does later say, but I didn't know any of this. Yeah, I didn't know Mama was dying. She needed to say it immediately. She needed to if I had, what's her name? Susan McMartin on the phone right now, I'd say, that's a mistake. Fix that screenplay. Have her acknowledge it right away. Otherwise, you're breaking your rules of narration here. Anyway, then she gets older and, friends with Mr. Church is sort of like, you know, this advisor and friend, kind of, cook.
Yeah,
but
because
he won't talk about his personal life.
He won't talk about his personal life, and he doesn't want to talk a lot about anything else. And I really do like Eddie Murphy's performance here. It's it's that weird thing where you realize how good Eddie Murphy is if you would just be handed better stuff or choose better things or whatever the case may be or work more. Who cares?
And what a strange choice this is, because it's not like Eddie Murphy. He's not like because this is originally supposed to be Samuel L. Jackson, which makes total sense because he's in 10 movies a year and he'll make anything.
Right.
He would make Samuel L. Jackson would be in a movie that you and I were making if we asked him and if we paid him.
We just got to what we got to do. We got to get Samuel L. Jackson those pitch me's.
There we go. There we go.
And then he'll think it's real and he'll just be like, I'm high, and then once we have him attached, then we can do the rest.
But yeah, but Eddie Murphy, he's made like 3 movies in the last 10 years or something.
Yeah, I don't think he's actually made a movie in the last 4 or 5 years.
The last one was 1,000 Words in 2012. Tower Heist, year before that.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, it just feels kind of annoying. Because we're stuck with this girl telling this story.
Right, but then she does grow up. Once she's not the little girl anymore, she's all right.
She's okay.
She's better.
She's definitely still better. But yeah, it just doesn't feel like there's a lot there to grasp onto. Occasionally, Mr. Church will reveal something, some hint of something about his past. Mm-hmm. But she's clawing at the knowledge, and it's not sweet. It's not endearing. It's not comforting when she's desperate to find out more about Mr. Church.
What's she doing during all this time? Well, like when she's not, what's her life? What's her story? I didn't take any notes on this movie.
she goes off to college.
Oh, that's right. Oh, college. Yes. Oh, that's right. That's right.
She goes off to college.
Goes off to college and then comes back and winds up, living with
back
Mr. Church.
Needing Mr. Church. And
right. That's right.
She explains something that is so significant as, I don't want to spoil it. If you ever sit through this movie, because it's drama and you want to watch it unfold. But the way that she explains something really significant about herself was kind of like, yeah, I was just kind of, I didn't know how to deal with the loss of my mom. But it happened.
So I got pregnant and had a baby. Whoops, I blew it. Sorry, I spoiled it. So sorry. Yeah, explain, no dimension of like who the father or why or when.
3 or 4 years had passed, but like the way that she summed up her life in that dialogue did not make sense from what we had actually seen in the film.
Right.
And again, it felt like somebody was leading us on a story that didn't really know what the story was supposed to be about.
Well, for 15 years, I had this cook in my life that my mom's old boyfriend left to her. And it was such a weird arrangement to have this black guy as a cook live in my house. And I got to write a movie about it.
Yeah.
That's the story. So this is not a good movie, but it has a good performance by Eddie Murphy.
Because Eddie Murphy exists, I give it a 5 out of 10.
I give it a C. And then next up, Operation Avalanche.
Operation Avalanche.
How many movies were there last year about the moon landing being a hoax and a conspiracy? I don't think there were any. This year there's 2 so far.
Yeah. And one is really enjoyable, in my opinion. One I've seen twice.
Moonwalkers, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Moonwalkers, yeah. And then now Operation Avalanche here. This is set in 1967. Cold War. Oh, you remember how cold that war was.
Freezing.
Yeah, one of the coldest. And it's a race to the moon. We're racing with the Soviets to get to the moon first. Because if they get there first, that means they're better than us.
But there might be a problem. We might not be able to get there, so what do we do? What do? We cover our tracks and we trick America into believing maybe we did it.
Right.
That's the concept here as it goes along.
Basically, it's before that, NASA apparently has a mole that's leaking secrets to the Soviets or whatever. So the CIA wants to get in there and put a plug in that leak. So a couple of guys, Matt Johnson is one of them. Matt Johnson.
Owen Williams.
Owen Williams and a couple others. Who basically just are cameramen. This is all we filmed it ourselves. This is the CIA guys. CIA
found,
guys
this is found footage yeah. kind of thing. By the way, this was my 3rd found footage movie in a row.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Just Blair Witch, Good Neighbor, and then this. I hope that record will never be broken by me. I never want to see 4 found footage movies in a row. This one, I will say it was the least jarring, like visually, like they held the camera.
Right. Steady. Well, and because the ruse they come up with is that these CIA guys who are working for the CIA, not as spies, but sort of as filmmakers, basically.
They're the AV club.
Yeah. For the CIA. They say, hey, NASA won't suspect us. Send us in. We'll say that we're making a documentary about the Apollo missions, which makes sense, mm-hmm. behind the scenes thing. So that's why they're filming everything, and they'll, in the meantime, also figure out who the mole is. So here we go. And then, as you say, one of the things they learned is that we can't get to the moon in time, and so Matt, the main guy, has this idea. Why don't we fake it?
Yeah, and he's going above his pay grade, as they say here. He's like pulling some strings that shouldn't be pulled.
Has to make up a fake assignment from the boss to convince his colleagues that they're going to do it.
There's other operations names, not just Avalanche. There's Deep Red. There's Zipper.
Mm-hmm.
That's something. It was amusing for a found footage movie to start off with like the square visual.
Because, it's 1967, right. So it's what would be the equivalent of a home movie camera then.
And at one point, he's like, okay, we'll do it, but we need better cameras. And boom, next scene is like better color, full
screen. But still, I think, accurate for late 60s. And they did a good job of making that look real. And that's amusing. That's amusing to see, especially to see the size, the clunkiness of the cameras, and especially having just seen Blair Witch.
So Matt Johnson, he made a movie a little while ago that I saw at some festival called The Dirties. And I liked it for the most part. Another found footage film. It was about high schoolers that eventually, brought guns and did terrible things to their school.
As one does.
As one does. Matt Johnson fits in that high school role. Here, he doesn't fit as somebody that would be CIA. He doesn't fit as somebody that would even be like accidentally nerdy CIA because there's something.
Well, for one thing, he's Canadian and he's obviously Canadian.
But he
and the others got very clear Canadian accents.
He's also
I don't buy them as CIA.
He's
agents.
Stupidly naive and arrogant and joyous. Like in that kind of goofy way to where right. it doesn't he's just all too excited about the information and what does this mean? And oh, my gosh. And things like that don't really fit a seriousness. And then when the tension that somebody is watching them is introduced. So in other words, maybe the mole knows, maybe somebody else knows mm-hmm. what's going on here. There's that additional level. It actually kind of felt like a little false and idiotic. Like I never felt the tension in this film
that they were desperate to show me was, oh no, this is the whole point now. Now we're all nervous, right?
Right, because it's a silly thing, and it is funny, and it's clever how they work it into what we know of real life, of what really happened.
And I actually like the idea of, okay, what visuals would be the best? What, like, what right. rocks do we need?
How
do we do
scouting?
How do we do this as AV nerds? How do we do this? I like that idea. I don't like the idea that, like, oh, somebody's watching from a grassy knoll, not a grassy knoll, but, like, you know, whatever. That that did not work in the way that they tried to capture it in this movie for me.
And the movie gets it becomes like this espionage thing, and it doesn't work because it is silly and it's you know, but it's fine.
It's a third act that doesn't work, and that's always the roughest part because I didn't mind the journey. I was kind of into it sometimes. It wasn't awful. I liked his sidekick, not necessarily sidekick, but the guy working with him who had regrets and doubts, Owen Williams.
Right. Then there's a jerky supervisor who's kind of funny.
It's just always so rough when a movie ends. Like, you know, there's a good solid 20, 25 minutes that you just don't care for, and that's how it ends. You can't necessarily say, ah, it's okay, just watch the first two-thirds. You can't do that.
Right.
It's a 5 out of 10 for me.
It's a C+. And then finally, we have a movie that you saw and I didn't.
Max Rose. I was curious. This is Jerry Lewis.
Does he do that voice the whole time?
Not at all.
Weird. Well, I'm not sorry I didn't watch it then.
It is a drama. It is about a man dealing with his wife's death.
Of cancer?
Maybe. Let's just say yes, but I can't. Okay. I'm not. Yeah.
Maybe just old age.
It was either 60 or 65 years of marriage.
Wow. It's a long marriage.
Just insane that that's even possible. And he's kind of looking into his past a little bit with her and thinking about this one thing that he can't get out of his head. And it kind of leads to, oh, maybe she had a secret about another man.
Mm.
And how does this guy deal with it?
All right.
The problem is Jerry Lewis is occasionally an okay actor at this point.
Yeah.
I think this might have been filmed. I think I read it was like actually filmed in 2013. Released now, 2016. Right. Like, there's times when his mouth is agape, and I don't think it's for performance. I think it's just who he is now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think
he's 90. He's 90 now.
He's 90, but it didn't seem like he was necessarily in the wheelhouse of this performance. It didn't seem like I was watching a legend hitting one more high note as a lead performer before it was all done. He didn't strike me as somebody that was ridiculously engaging to see on the big screen, anything like that. There's a few scenes that work quite well when he finally moves into this old folks community where it's him and a couple of other guys that you remember mainly as like, oh, that guy. Yes, I know him. I don't know how many movies I've seen him in, but I've seen him in tons. Like, there's those moments. Otherwise, it's him working with his granddaughter on occasion, who I guess she has her slight issues of like doesn't want to leave her grandfather behind to pursue her own relationship. It all feels very kind of weak there.
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis has problems with Kevin Pollak, his son, in the film. It just meh. It all leads up to this scene where Jerry Lewis and Dean Stockwell are acting together. And there's something to it where you're kind of like you're glad you're consuming it, even if you don't think it's all that interesting or good. And that's sadly, that's how it's the whole movie is just kind of like him, old man, looking around the house, having a memory about it, moving forward. And that's it.
Yeah.
It's a 5 out of 10. It's fine. It's passable. If you're desperate to see Jerry Lewis, this is your chance.
I'm not. I'm okay with not seeing him. By the time you folks hear this, you know where we'll be. Fantastic Fest.
The greatest place in all the world.
One of our favorite places to go, Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas at the Alamo Draft House. By the time you hear this, we'll have already seen some movies. I will have possibly already given Jeff a haircut.
Yeah.
That may have happened by now. But we thought we'd give a little preview to mention a few movies we're looking forward to.
Yeah, just some teasing.
There's lots of movies, and you can't see them all. You don't want to see them all. Some of them aren't very good, let's be honest.
Oh, by the way, we're also going to do a satanic panic room.
Oh yeah, like a like a room with the solving clues and something to get out or something.
Neil Miller and Rob Hunter have agreed to do it with us, and from what I understand, it's just a matter of like, I mean, if we have to, like, they die and we survive, right?
I think whoever is smallest, Rob Hunter would be smallest, I think, of the four of us. So
such
he'd be the one.
Tiny, tiny little man.
He'd be the one that, yeah, that would we'd sacrifice if need be.
Yeah.
One movie that I'm looking forward to is called Fashionista.
What?
And here's why I'm looking forward to it. Director is Simon Rumley, who made a movie called Red, White, and Blue, which I think actually played at South by Southwest, not Fantastic Fest. But it was like 6 years ago, and it was unsettling and ugly.
Oh, wait, Fashionista, yes. Okay, yes, it's on my radar. Yes, I remember this now.
Red, White, and Blue, unsettling and ugly in a good way. And so I'm curious to see more work by him. I don't even remember what Fashionista is about. Just, oh, it's Simon Rumley.
It's about a man and a woman, and then I forget after that.
That's right. The description is vague enough to make me intrigued. Man and a woman and the clothing store, and then the man makes a single destructive mistake. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued.
My first that has me anticipating the excitement that I will feel once I sit down in the theater and watch this movie. My entire high school sinking into the sea. My entire high school sinking into the sea.
It's a good title.
It's animated. It's only 74 minutes long.
Sold.
Big fan of that at the festival.
Yeah.
Here's the brief summary. Jason Schwartzman. Okay, that's enough right there for me, but I'll go on. Voices a young, hopeful writer who jumps into action during a disaster in this dazzling and hilarious animated adventure from famed graphic novelist Dash Shaw.
Dash Shaw.
Now, I don't read graphics or novels.
Right.
So put them together, and that's two strikes already.
Forget
I don't do
about it.
But I don't care because Jason Schwartzman, 74 minutes, my entire high school sinking into the sea.
I'm curious about Dog Eat Dog.
Me too.
Primarily because it's directed by Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver and several other things, and has directed some things. And he's a dark kind of twisted guy. And this seems to be is described as an unhinged pulp comedy. Hardened criminals and the final simple crime, which will bring them all down. So and there's like some film noir to it, I guess, and some, I'm sure, violence and terrible things happening. And Nicolas Cage is in it.
Yeah, that's why I wrote it down.
So yeah, should be a good one.
I got Rats.
Oh, is that the Morgan Spurlock one?
Morgan Spurlock. I'm a fan of Morgan Spurlock.
Is this like the history of rats?
This is the history of rats. I have a weird fascination with rats.
All right.
They don't, I like seeing rats. I don't know what this means, but I don't necessarily, for a while I had this weird thing where I just kept imagining when I lived in Chicago that in the winters of Chicago, the only way the rats would be able to survive is if they all made some giant pile underground in the sewers and maybe one day somebody would encounter them and they would see like 10,000 rats in like a pyramid shape of some sort.
Mm.
And I didn't know what it meant. I don't know why I had that thought, but I kind of like rats.
You don't have to justify wanting to see the rats movie to me.
I don't like them. I just kind of like, I want to sit in a theater and learn about
them. Fascinated by them. I don't like murder and torture and mayhem, but I sometimes like seeing movies about those things. That's what Donald Trump is a big pile of rats. Big pile of rats all stacked on each other into a big human-shaped pile. The Handmaiden.
Go on.
Is another one of mine. The director, Chan-wook Park from Korea. He's who made Stoker and Old Boy. And this is based on a novel that I have not read. I'm told that it's twisted, or that the movie anyway is twisted. There's like cheating and con artists and double crosses and...
I like that.
And I assume, again, being Chan-wook Park, that there will be something twisted and bizarre and creepy. Or not creepy necessarily, but icky. Something icky. I bet something icky happens in this movie.
My last one that I'm excited about. The Dwarves Must Be Crazy.
The Dwarves Must Be Crazy. All right. Go on.
there's a still image of five dwarves on each other's shoulders, like standing up.
All right.
That's what we got. And I don't know if you recall this. I'm a big fan of dwarves being dwarves, as opposed to the CGI version where it's this, you know, human transposed into...
Right. Well, you know, dwarves are human too. Yes, you like actual dwarves rather than tall people pretending to be dwarves.
And it's from Thailand.
Oh, Thailand dwarves.
There you go.
Huh.
A Thai village of little people is attacked by evil, butt-munching, fart-tracking Krauss spirits, floating heads with attached intestines in this slapstick horror comedy.
Hmm.
The dwarves must be crazy.
That is very much a Fantastic Fest movie.
Yeah.
That description right there.
100%.
That is pure, unfiltered Fantastic Fest. So, yeah, there's a few of the ones we're looking forward to. Who knows if we'll even be able to see any of those, because it's always a crapshoot day to day. But that's part of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, next week we'll have a report on all the fun and merriment that went on and the movies we saw. We'll have pictures. Be looking at Facebook or our Twitter at MovieBS. We'll have pictures, I'm sure, of the haircut that I give Jeff.
Now, you have no idea what you're doing.
No.
You don't have a game plan.
No. I don't know how to cut hair. That's the whole point. Just gonna in the moment, on the day, I'll just sort of see how the mood strikes me.
Wouldn't it be amazing if you found out this was your greatest unknown talent of all time?
Turns out I'm a great barber.
For the rest of the week, everybody's just like, oh my gosh, Jeff, you've never looked so good.
That would be funny.
Yeah.
Unlikely.
But I'm just saying maybe you should consider doing it that way. Like going into it with that intention.
That would defeat the purpose is to make you look ridiculous. Remember, because you lost the bet. That's the whole point, is for you to look ridiculous. The same as last year, I had to look ridiculous wearing those fake tattoos the whole week because I had lost that.
I don't live in the past. I don't remember that. I'm just focused on the now and the future, man.
Yeah, all right. All right.
I just want to be positive, and I thought you did too.
Now and in the future, you're going to look ridiculous for a week. I'm just telling you. You need to face it and face it now. So, yeah, we have that to look forward to.
I'll just comb it out. I'm sure I can comb it out.
Hey, something we'd like to do to make the show more useful is tell you movies, not just that are in theaters now that you can go see. We did that earlier. But also new films that have just come out on DVD and Blu-ray and video on demand and stuff.
Yeah, just in case you forgot, or just in case maybe you're not allowed out of the house. Maybe you have little ones and you realize it doesn't make sense to buy two $10 tickets, get a babysitter for $15 an hour, try to get a bite to eat beforehand. And
ridiculous.
Blah,
so
blah,
expensive.
Blah. Just or maybe, stay at home and watch a movie.
Maybe you're on house arrest. But so, maybe in movies we mentioned before that now they're out on video and you can check them out for yourselves. Did you ever get around to seeing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows?
I think it's my new battleship.
Movie that you'll just never see?
No, I saw it. Oh. I think it took me 2 years. It was on HBO, and I was just like, you know what? It's happening. I finally found 2 hours and 45 minutes, although this one I assume is not longer than 2 hours.
No, it's not absurdly long.
But there will be a time where I sit down and watch this movie, because I did not mind the first one.
This one is this is the first one of all of the many, many six. There are six movies there have been. This is the first one that I actually enjoyed.
What did you give it?
I gave it a B.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
It's made for 12-year-olds.
Oh, that's right.
But without that being meant as an insult. it's you know, easygoing and occasionally funny. And anyway,
a movie you should see is Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it.
Me too. Yeah, that was funny stuff.
Yep. I guess you would technically have to like the cast beforehand.
Well, yeah, and if you didn't like the first Neighbors, then I wouldn't bother.
Well, no, I think more importantly, I think you were probably trying to say, like, you probably don't have a good sense of humor. People don't like you very much.
That's not what I was trying to say.
No? Oh, okay.
But yeah, this is Neighbors 2, quite funny. And it managed to not be sleazy or sexist, even though it's about sorority girls, which is
that's
amazing.
Right. That's right.
Free State of Jones, that was the Matthew McConaughey slavery thing.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything.
Yeah, but, no.
by passing it in the theater. So continue doing that.
If you're a big Civil War buff, then maybe you'll want to watch it. Similarly, Pele, Birth of a Legend. If you're a huge Pele fan or a huge soccer fan, like if you're so much of a soccer fan that you call it football, then maybe you'd want to watch Pele, Birth of a Legend. Otherwise, it's a pretty basic biopic.
So if you're a huge soccer fan, get on the fence and then consider.
I guess, yeah. Those are this week. And then from last week, Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, the Andy Samberg thing. You and I both were like in the B-minus range for this movie.
Yeah.
Everyone else that we know liked it a lot more. And I do – it seems like the kind of movie – I thought this at the time. It seems like the kind of movie that might get better on rewatch.
I would consider a rewatch.
Yeah, I would be up for that.
Yeah. De Palma, did you see it?
I did, and it's really good. Just simple interview with Brian De Palma.
That's right, that's right.
He goes chronologically through each of his films, and he's very frank and forthright about what worked and what didn't. And if you like movies – even if you're not a particularly a big De Palma fan, which I wasn't, but if you just like movies and like how they're made, the whole sausage factory, it's very entertaining. The Conjuring 2 is also out. That was all right. Not as good as the first one, but...
it's a definite step down, but if you need a little horror juice in your diet,
yeah,
you could do worse.
And Captain America Civil War, which I thought that I gave a B+, and in our official Movie BS database, it says B+. No, I gave it a B. My review is just a plain old B. That was an error.
Are you saying you're going into the database?
I've gone to the database to fix it now. Because my review clearly says regular B.
What do I remember? I remember Paul Rudd steals it for a second, and then Spider-Man steals it for a second.
Yeah.
And then they get pretty serious at the end, Iron Man and Captain America. And that's what I remember.
And it's like 2.5 hours long.
That's the problem. My wife likes superhero movies. I don't know when we're going to have time.
And Captain America's name is in the title, but it's really just an Avengers movie. It's really the Avengers 3.
Or maybe like 2.5.
Yeah. It's just the Avengers, except for the two of them aren't there. So eventually, these Marvel movies will be like there'll be 20 minutes in each Marvel movie devoted to explaining why various characters are not in the movie. It keeps stacking up.
Has anybody seen Thor?
What about Thor's girlfriend? Remember her?
It's really weird. I haven't seen her lately.
Pepper Potts. Wasn't that somebody? Pepper Potts? So that's the show. We've had a big one today. Lots to talk about.
Yeah. Too much talking?
I don't know about too much, but we had six movies. We had Magnificent Seven, which we both liked.
Very much so.
BS approved, that one was.
Bam. First in a while, BS approving? It feels like it.
I think that we say that every time. I think we always say that it feels like it's been a long time.
I feel like I just say, it's like, oh, you blew it. It's not BS approved. That's all I feel like.
That happens a lot, too. Other People is okay.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
It's good. If you say it twice, it doesn't mean as much.
It's good. I had criticisms of it, but it's still good.
It's good.
The Good Neighbor, also good?
I think so. I
equally
think
good. We gave both those movies the same grades, B- and 7 out of 10 for both those
movies.
Yeah,
I think Good Neighbor is a little bit more creative. I will say that.
Yeah, it's more creative than Other People, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But one of them has Molly Shannon in it, so.
Yeah, yeah. And only one of them has Landry from Friday Night Lights having sex with, what's his name?
Oh, gosh, that's right.
From Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Mr. Church, if you want to see really good Eddie Murphy performance, there are other movies that are good that have them, but this movie also has one of those.
Right, right.
Operation Avalanche, eh.
Yeah.
If Operation Avalanche, when that shows up on Netflix, that'll be a good place to watch that, when it's free.
Yeah, because it actually would suck you in.
Yeah, no, it definitely passes the time, and it's, yeah. And then Max Rowe, as you said, is no.
It's not bad, but unnecessary.
Max Rolls! Lady! He doesn't talk like that at all?
No.
All right, well, we're at Fantastic Fest having fun, so we'll talk to you about that next time. Until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.